Hello and good morning. Welcome to WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I hope that you are having a lovely Monday morning. It's bright and early. It's not quite bright yet, actually. It's still dark. But welcome. My name is Gabriel Molnar. I'm your host for the next hour. And this is my show, Bird Brain. So what is Bird Brain, you may be asking yourself, if you're just rolling out of bed, grabbing an espresso, possibly, or driving to work? Well, Bird Brain is this concept that I have where I will be sharing music, an artist that I enjoy listening to, and a little bit of their history on a genre-by-genre basis. So every month we'll be picking a genre and then looking at artists that shape that genre, both from the beginning to kind of the meat of that genre or era, and then even, we'll be looking at kind of where that genre stands now. And I would like to invite you in joining me today in talking about neo-soul. But before we start, I have, an announcement to make, but I just want to say that this is a very special day for me. It is my grandfather's birthday, Mike Parker. He hopefully is listening right now in Berkeley, California. So I would just like you all to join me in wishing him a very happy birthday. He turns 86 today, which is no small feat. He's doing it in style as well, style and grace. So Papa, happy 86th birthday. And this first song, before we dive into Neo Soul, will be for you. So I hope that you all enjoy In a Sentimental Mood by Duke Ellington and John Coltrane.
Thank you.
Papa. I hope you enjoyed that one. Everyone else, I hope you enjoyed that one too. I hope that In a Sentimental Mood was a great way to kick off your Monday morning, because I know for sure it was for me. Just a quick note about that song. It is one of my grandfather's favorite songs, and it was also composed in the year that he was born. So that song has also turned 86 this year, which is wild. Yeah. So, to get back into it, to get back to bird-brained neo-soul, that's what we're talking about today. So you may be asking, what is neo-soul? What does neo mean? What does soul mean? Both are very good and very valid questions. So neo is normally just a prefix attached to, in terms of musical genres, it means kind of a new iteration of something. Soul, obviously, is soul music. So the term itself was coined in the 1990s by Kedar Massenburg, who's the president of Motown Records, which is a semi-small indie record label. And neo-soul as a movement emerged more in the 1980s and 1990s, both in the United States and in the United Kingdom. And it emerged from soul and contemporary R&B. And it finds its roots more in gospel music, funk, jazz, blues, as we'll hear hopefully over the next hour. And it acted as a transition to what we know today as hip-hop, black pop, and contemporary R&B. So what does neo-soul look like? Why was it so neo? What was it? Well, it broke mainly from traditional R&B, which was single-based, hip-hop-based, and at the time, artists were playing more with samples, and it brought back kind of more organic elements of soul with live instrumentation. It brought in from hip-hop to include more elements of gospel, which you hear oftentimes in background singers and chant-esque vocals that characterize gospel music. And it also touches on funk and reggae. And we'll touch back on this a little bit. It was an era of increased experimentation of grooves. As some of you may know, a groove is kind of the changing pattern of a song. It's like swing and jazz, if you will. It's the cycle of rhythm. And in terms of lyricism and content, we move more from these popularized narratives of love and hedonism to more of these deeply political and personal songs about the state of the world as it is today. So today, what will we be doing today? Who are we focusing on today? We will be focusing on one of the forefathers of neo-soul. There were a lot to choose from. I could have picked anyone from the superstars of the 70s like Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, and Al Green. But today, we will be looking at the music of Gil Scott-Heron and Brian Jackson. These two are fantastic artists, and I hope you will understand why as this hour progresses. So without further ado, this will be the first song of this show. It's called Introduction/ The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. This might be a different version of The Revolution That Will Not Be Televised that you may not have heard. It's from Gil Scott-Heron's first album, it's Small Talk at 125th and Lennox. So without further ado, here's our first track of the day. I hope you all enjoy.
Good evening and welcome. My name is Gil Scott-Heron. My accomplices are, first from left to right, Eddie Knowles, a drummer for the Denny Zulu Dance Group, a drummer for the Simba Dancers, and a percussionist for a group called Black and Blues. The brother to my immediate left is Charlie Saunders of the Simba Dance Group and a former drummer for Loretta Parker. David Barnes, a singer for Black and Blues, will be heard later on in the evening. We'd like to do a poem for you called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, primarily because it won't be.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Mendel Rivers to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner. The revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on reports from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still lifes of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he had been saving for just the right occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so goddamn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally screwed Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry Arm women liberationists and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Keyes, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, or Engelbert Humperdinck. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
So I hope that that first track gave you all a little bit of a taste of who Gil Scott-Heron is. He's this very unapologetic, very upfront poet and political activist. And we'll track that a little bit more throughout the hour. But that song was off his first album. It was not a studio album, as you can tell. It's recorded from this very raw, kind of gritty standpoint. It was produced in part by Bob Thiel, who, if some of you may know, but he was a producer for Louis Armstrong and John Coltrane. So Gil Scott-Heron's early career was obviously in good hands. So how did Scott-Heron come to make this album? Well, just as a little biography about Gil Scott-Heron, he was born in Chicago in 1949. His parents were divorced, so he moved to Jackson, Tennessee, where he lived with his grandmother, Lil, for 12 years. She died when he was 12. This topic, his grandmother, and just his upbringing in a predominantly female household are themes throughout his music, where if you listen to his full discography, you'll see that represented quite well. But after she died, he moved to the Bronx, New York, where he went to a very rich, very white private school where he was one of five black students, and he was there on a writing scholarship. So Gil Scott-Heron was a prolific writer. He released his first poetry anthology at the age of 13 and before releasing any music, which is what he ultimately became somewhat famous for. He released a book called The Vulture. So after he went to private school, he went to Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, where he became very familiar with the black arts movement. And he was particularly influenced by the group The Last Poets. And he, from working with The Last Poets, which was a group of five, I believe, black artists and poets in Pennsylvania, he was influenced to start the group Black and Blues, which, if you heard at the beginning of the track when he was introducing some of the artists that he was working with, some of the drummers were from that group, Black and Blues. So this song is actually a response to one of The Last Poets' poems, which is called When the Revolution Comes, and it starts with the line, "When the revolution comes, some of us will probably catch it on TV," which is a commentary on kind of the inactivity of some in activism, and also a call to arms, or not necessarily arms, but a call to action for all, and a call to not complacency for all. So the themes of this album, Small Talk at 125 Lennox, and Lennox, it's a 14-track album. It deals a lot with consumerism, like calls out to Xerox, and the slogan, "Give Your Mouth Sex Appeal," like, which is an ultra-bright slogan. And he also talks a lot about the ignorance of white the white middle class in America to the continuously degrading state of inner cities in the 1970s. You can very clearly hear that in the lyrics of The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. So this was his first album. It was super gritty. It was primarily Gil Scott-Heron talking in this really dynamic, deep, emotive, raw voice, which makes it a very powerful listen. And it's not this conventional form of music. It's spoken word poetry. It's kind of this proto-rap, which is very, very compelling. With the sake of time in mind, because we are a quarter of the hour through, we'll be moving on to the next song, which is called Lady Day and John Coltrane. So from this kind of first raw, grimy interaction with music, Gil Scott-Heron paired up with a artist named Brian Jackson, who we'll talk about in a little bit, and kind of moves towards these more conventional song structures and more conventional kind of topics and themes on his next album, Pieces of a Man. And we'll talk about that a little bit after we hear this next song, Lady Day and John Coltrane by Gil Scott-Heron.
Ever feel kind of down and out, you don't know just what to do?
My goodness, that is groovy. Oh boy, that was, wow. That's, every time I hear that song, I'm just a little bit struck. Unironically, that's a great song. So as you can tell from just this song to the last, Pieces of a Man sees Gil Scott-Heron, largely in part to Bob Thiel, the producer we were talking about earlier, and Brian Jackson, moves more into this kind of traditionally jazz-influenced, blues-influenced sound, which I'm not complaining about. I think it sounds fantastic. This album marked the first of several collaborations with Brian Harris. Brian Harris and Gil Scott-Heron would then collaborate. This album was released in the early 1970s, 1971. And Gil Scott-Heron and Brian Harris would collaborate regularly until the early 80s. So this is the first studio album and marks kind of the first song of a decade of collaboration between these two artists. This was released under the Flying Dutchman Records label. And just a quick note about the album before we talk a little bit more about Brian Jackson and the meaning of the song. Just generally, it has these very bluesy, jazzy influences. It's Scott-Heron's first study in what he called bluesology. Bluesology is a term that Gil Scott-Heron coined, which he took to mean the science of how things feel. So if you ask Gil Scott-Heron what he wouldn't have said a poet, he wouldn't have said an author, he wouldn't have even said a musician, he would have said that he was a bluesologist. He was someone who studied the way that things feel. He was someone that kind of took the way that he felt about current social movements and moments and then would transfer that through music and media to educate and share that with people who listen to his music. So this is his first study in bluesology. There are obviously features of soul, jazz, R&B, as we just heard. There's also some proto-rap or more spoken word on this album. Gil Scott-Heron never takes that out of his music. It will always be there, and we'll hear that throughout this hour. But it's a little bit pared back on this album. This is more of a jazz blues album if you listen to the whole thing. So the song itself, Lady Day and John Coltrane. Lady Day, for those of you who don't know, is Billie Holiday. And John Coltrane is John Coltrane. I hope all of you know and are familiar with John Coltrane. So this song is both an homage to the influences of Lady Day and John Coltrane on Gil Scott-Heron. And it's also a commentary on alienation and existentialism in the United States and how music can bridge gaps between people. And when you're feeling lonely and apart from people, music is a great way to connect. So this is not a typical narrative of a Gil Scott-Heron song. It's not very political, but it is kind of what Gil Scott-Heron aims to do in a lot of his music is educate and talk directly to the community, the Black community, of the United States. And this song is kind of representation of stepping back and reminding people to connect, which I think is beautiful. Next up, we'll be listening to a track off of his next album called Free Will. Free Will was released the year after, in 1972. It was a very interesting album. The first side, the A side, is more kind of what we just heard of Gil Scott-Heron and Brian Jackson getting very bluesy, very jazzy. And the second side, the B side, is mainly proto-rap in the style of Free Talk at 125th and Lennox. So we'll be listening to a proto-rap track. Oh, I almost forgot. Brian Jackson. Who's Brian Jackson? Right. Okay. Brian Jackson is, he was an American keyboardist, flautist, singer, composer, and producer. He, as you just heard on that track, was very good at his job. And he's also known as kind of the soundsmith of Gil Scott-Heron's albums, Pieces of a Man, this next album, Free Will. We won't be hearing him on the next song, as it's a spoken word track, and also their most famous album together, Winter in America. And Brian Harris really provides the link between Gil Scott-Heron's work and the neo-soul movement, because these albums are characterized by these jazzy, eclectic sounds and mellow instrumentation that inspired the neo-soul movement. This was their first album, so they just kind of got together and started working together, so you don't hear that experimental kind of mellow nature as much that I wouldn't call Lady Day and John Coltrane a mellow song. But this song marks the beginning of a collaboration between the two. So to get back to it, we're going to talk about Ain't No New Thing, which is a spoken word track about the white American media mainstream stealing and packaging black art as its own and then profiting off of that. So this, just as a quick warning, there are no swear words in the song, but there is some intense imagery. So if you would rather not hear that on your Monday morning, I encourage you to tune out for a little bit and then tune back in about 2 or 3 minutes. But here we go, Ain't No New Thing.
Cultural rape and no geographical boundaries on white hate and bizarre, scarcely concealed attempts to eliminate black generators of sun heat feeling. Ain't no new thing to see demon fangs curling out from under squeezed tight too thin lips and leaping at jugular veins in burning black throats that either blow or sing or cry or scream. Ain't no new thing to see the bubbling envy flashing from the depths of soulless eyes as still another link with God is created. We used to having white people try to rob us. Why don't they try stealing some of this poverty? Ain't no new thing. Anything they can't understand, they try to destroy. Anything they can't understand, they try to control. In 1896, black men picked up brass instruments and began to evoke and conjure, entice and struggle with black spirits. Rhythmic spirits of blues, work songs, gospel songs, freedom songs, and songs of love of Mother Night. Screaming rhythm, juju, rhythm, voodoo, rhythm, black magic that calls back to lost worlds and lost lifestyles, calling back to lost peace and peace of mind, calling back to Genesis, calling back to the drum, calling back to the drum, calling back to the first song chant, song chant, song chant that original man created. In 1896, this new spasm was called ass, but the ass would not be kicked. So it was copied in an attempt to control it, and then it was called jazz. We used to having black innovators copied and sent back to us. What about the Osmond Brothers? What about Elvis Presley? What about Tom Jones? We used to having people try to rob us. It ain't no new thing. They used the media to project their jazz idols. Tommy Dorsey and Jimmy Dorsey and Harry James and Benny Goodman. And I suppose someday Lawrence Welk will join that elite group. And then there was sweet Bessie Smith laying on the blood-soaked backseat of that broken-down jalopy with a tattered quilt wrapped around her shoulders, waiting for someone to come to her aid on a rainy Mississippi night, while a white hospital will not accept her right across the street. Ain't no new thing. Fats Navarro screaming through tormenting dreams, frustration ripping at his mind and bowels. Over 100 pounds melted from his frame as he battled that white powder mountain. Ain't no new thing. Cultural rape and no geographical boundaries on white hate. Hide black musicians away in funky smoke-filled nightclubs, the Chitlin' Circuit. Saturate their worlds with two-bit punks, washed-out baggy-faced white whores, weasel-faced yellow-skinned junkies, and cutthroat white managers, producers, agents, owners, and on and on and on. We used to having white people try to rob us. Ain't no new thing. We have dug his game. Charlie Parker will live on. John Coltrane will live on. Eric Dolphy will live on. Billie Holiday will live on. Jimi Hendrix and Clifford Brown and Lee Morgan will live on. And on in the sunshine of their accomplishments, the glory of the dimensions that they added to our lives. We declare war on Eric Burdon. We discredit the talents of Janis Joplin and Rare Earth. We urge that the next blue-eyed soul group include Melvin Laird, Lyndon Johnson, Nixon, and Spearhead Agnew, and be called As the Stomach Turns. We urge that the album John Wayne Sings the Blues be released. Release the album J. Edgar Hoover Sings James Brown. Release the album Wallace and Maddox Sing Sam and Dave. Why not? We hear Tony the Tiger saying, right on, Tiger. We heard Nixon talking about power to the people. It ain't no new thing. 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 America is always the same old shit.
So that was Ain't No New Thing by Gil Scott-Heron. It's this very upfront, confrontational, if you will, address to white media, which basically says, stop stealing our art. And it extends that message from art, talking about kind of Chuck Berry and Elvis Presley specifically, and also kind of the creation of jazz off the backs of the likes of Coltrane and Duke Ellington, and kind of the rise of white quartets and trios. It extends that conversation also to politics and looks at the stealing of the phrase "power to the people" and kind of the rhetoric of Black power movements and Black power activists. So in content, you know, you just listen to lyrics and it's all there. There's not a lot that I can add to that song, add to that, the power that is in that spoken word poem. I find it powerful. I hope that you do too. In style, it's very proto-rap. It is, by proto-rap, I know I've said a lot this hour, but I just mean kind of precursory to rap, and kind of the poetry that we hear in music today. Obviously, there are continued themes of Black pride, and this theme of talking about the robbery of Black art wasn't new to Gil Scott-Heron, but it kind of in the 1970s was not seldom talked about, but not in such a powerful way. And it also kind of starts this trend in neo soul of talking about this. So to just connect it to a neo soul artist, if you look at the album Black on Both Sides by Mos Def, the track Rock and Roll, he talks about a lot of the similar themes that we just heard. So a lyric from that goes, "I said Elvis Presley ain't got no soul. Chuck Berry is rock and roll. You may dig the Rolling Stones, but they didn't come out with that style on their own." And so this is kind of the genesis of this continued theme of protest through art. And I just think it's a very, very powerful track, and I hope that you enjoyed it. So next up, we're going to be talking about a song from Winter in America, which is another album by Brian Jackson and Gil Scott-Heron. It talks about the political scene of the United States, I think post-Reagan, and it very much talks about how there's no solidified political perspective in the United States, and there's no, it was this weird kind of dull moment in American politics where, as Gil Scott-Heron says on this album, there's no one's taking sides, no one's fighting, because no one knows what to say. And we'll hear about that on this next track, Winter in America, which I will pull up on YouTube because it's not on Spotify. So if you'd like to hear it, I advise that you go to YouTube. Here we go. I apologize for not having this pulled up already. How unprofessional of me. Here we go. So this is Gil Scott-Heron and Brian Jackson, Winter in America. This is very much in keeping with their jazzier side. And it starts to sound more and more like neo-soul as Brian Jackson, gets more experimental with these tracks. We won't necessarily hear this on Winter in America, but we'll hear it on the track after, which is called The Bottle. But to start, Winter in America.
All from the Indians, welcome to pilgrims. And to the buffaloes who once ruled a plain, like the vultures circling beneath the dark clouds looking for the rain, looking for the rain. Just like the cities that stagger on the coastline, and a nation that just can't stand much more, like the forest buried beneath the highway, never had a chance to grow, never had a chance to grow. And now it's a winter. Winter in America. Yes, and all of the hillers have been killed, sent away. Yeah, but the people know it's winter. Winter in America. And ain't nobody fighting, 'cause nobody knows what to say. Save your soul, Lord knows, from winter in America. The Constitution, a noble piece of paper, with free society, a struggle, but they died in vain. And now democracy is a ragtime on the corner, hoping for some rain. They look like either hoping for some rain. And I see the robins perched in barren treetops. They're watching last-ditch races marching across the floor. But just like the peace sign that vanished in our dreams, never had a chance to grow. Never had a chance to grow. And now it's winter. Winter in America. And all of the hillers have been killed or betrayed. Yeah, but the people know it's winter. Lord knows it's winter in America. Nobody knows what to say. Save your soul from a winter in America.
So I apologize for my lack of political and historical knowledge in the United States, to correct what I said before I played the song. So this was not a political downturn. It was right after Watergate. It was also right after the Black Panther Party had been kind of neutralized by the CIA. Tufts Educational Radio. Learn more at stoptextstoprex.org. Yeah, so, you know, I think that's a good PSA because I've been in a couple too many cars with people texting while they're driving. So don't be afraid to just say, hey, put your phone down. I want to live today. And you know what? You'll live. You'll get over it. They'll get over it. And you'll actually live. So don't text while drive. Please take this seriously. And if you're a passenger, you know, kind of take some ownership in the situation if a driver is texting while driving. And just tell them to stop because it's better for both of you. All right. It is 6:43. I have way too many more songs to get through. You know what? We'll just see how far we get. And if we don't finish everything, that's okay. But, you know, we're still listening to Gil Scott-Heron. It's still WMFO in Medford. It's still Bird Brain. It's still Gabriel Molnar. It's still 6:44 in the morning. Next up, we have The Bottle, also off Winter in America. This is a groovy, groovy song. It's over Caribbean style track. So if you feel like getting up and dancing, which I very well may do in the studio at this moment, feel free. This is The Bottle by Gil Scott-Heron and Brian Jackson.
Oh, uno, dos, uno, dos, tres, cuatro. You see that black boy over there running scared, his old man in a bottle. He done quit his 9 to 5, he drank full time, and now he's living in a bottle. See that black boy over there running scared, his old man got a problem, and it's a bad one. He ain't done fond of damn near everything, his old woman waiting to beg for a bottle. And don't you think it's a crime when time after time after time, people in a bottle, there's people living in a bottle. Listen to me, see that sister, a show was fine, she's finally drinking wine in a bottle. Thank you.
come looking for me. You know where I'm bound to be, in the bottom. Turn around, look around on any corner. If you see some brother looking like a goner, it's gonna be me. Sing the song.
All right, so that was the first little bit of the bottle. I'm not going to play the entire song because I only have 12 minutes left with you all, and I'd love to get through what I planned for today. But just a little bit about the bottle. That was Gil Scott Heron's most popular song. It peaked at number 15 on jazz and R&B charts. And as you can tell, he mixes these pretty dark themes about alcohol abuse. It's also a song about abortion and incarceration. With this really infectious groove. I meant it when I said I was going to get up and dance. I just sat down from dancing. But regardless, so he mixes these really dark, or not dark, but very raw, real themes with popular music, which you wouldn't necessarily, I mean, you hear, but it's not conventional. It's not conventional. And it's this packaging of these very important conversations in a way that reach a lot of people. And when asked about this album and this song in particular in an interview, Gil Scott Heron said of the song, "Pop music doesn't necessarily have to be shit. It doesn't necessarily have to be mindless. It doesn't necessarily have to be kind of, you know, these sappy love songs that you kind of hear of the 70s. It can be real, and it can be powerful, and it can still be popular." So this is a great example. This song is a great example of the sounds of neo-soul. It has this organic, undeniably funky Caribbean beat. Brian Jackson does a fantastic job on the flute, as you heard. I certainly enjoyed that. I hope you did too. He's jazzy as you like. Gil Scott Heron on this album throughout is provocative and raw as ever. And they kind of reach this peak of musical... Of artistry on this album, if to be honest. And so this was released in 1974. Then from then on, they produced music until about the early 80s. So 1982, I think, is when they release kind of their last album in collaboration. And then after that, Gil Scott Heron goes on a 12-year break. This was largely, unfortunately, because he fell into the very traps that he warned about, alcoholism and drug use and possession. So, you know, those 12 years were not a bright time for Mr. Scott Heron. But he comes back, and he releases an album called Spirits in 1994. So this is 12 years after his last release. And this is already after Gil Scott Heron has had this massive impact on soul and hip-hop, on neo-soul, excuse me, and hip-hop. And the first track, it's called A Message to the Messengers. Is kind of this meta step back where he looks at his influence, and then he advises the artists of the 90s and 80s, especially hip hop artists. And yeah, you'll hear about that in this song. It's pretty cool to hear him talk directly to contemporaneous artists about what their impact should be, and kind of encourage them and say, look, the adversity that you're facing and the discredit and belittlement that you're facing as artists is nothing new. I went through it too. Here's how I went through it, and keep going. So it's kind of this cool intergenerational connection from the influence to the people that he influenced, or the influencees. So yeah, here's the song Message to the Messengers by Gil Scott Heron.
Hey, yeah, we're the same brothers from a long time ago. We was talking about television and doing it on the radio. What we did was to help our generation realize they got to get out there and get busy because it wasn't going to be televised. We got respect for young rappers and the way they freeway in. But if you're going to be teaching folks things, be sure you know what you're saying. Older folks in our neighborhood got plenty of know-how. Remember, if it wasn't for them, you wouldn't be out there now. And I ain't coming at you with no disrespect. All I'm saying is that you damn well got to be correct. because if you're going to be speaking for a whole generation and you know enough to try and handle their education, be sure you know the real deal about past situations and ain't just repeating what you heard on a local TV station. Sometimes they tell lies and put them in a truthful disguise. But the truth is, that's why we said it wouldn't be televised. They don't know what to say to our young folks, but they know that you do. And if they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? The first sign is peace. Tell all them gun-toting young brothers that the man is glad to see us out there killing one another. We raised too much hell when they were shooting us down, so they started poisoning our minds and trying to jerk us all around. And then they tell us they got to come in and control our situation. They want half of us on dope and the other half in incarceration. If the ones they want dead ain't killed by what they instigated, they can put some dope on the brother's body and claim it was drug-related. Tell them drug-related means there don't need to be no investigation, or at least that's the way they're gonna play it on the local TV station. All your 9mm brothers, give them something to think about. Tell them you heard that this is the new word. They got to work that stuff out. Because somehow they feeling the wrong way with a gun in their hands. They feeling real independent, but they just pulling contracts with a man. 5 and 5 will tell you it's hopeless out there on the avenue, but if they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? And if they look at you like you're insane and they start calling you scarecrow and say you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have finally co-opted your game, or worse yet, implying that you don't really know, that's the same thing they said about us a long time ago. Young rappers, one more suggestion before I get out of your way. But I appreciate the respect you give me and what you got to say. I'm saying protect your community and spread that respect around. Tell brothers and sisters they got to calm that bullshit down. Because we're terrorizing our old folks and we brought fear into our homes. And they ain't got to hang out with the senior citizens. Just tell them, damn it, leave the old folks alone. And we know who ripping off the neighborhood. Tell them that BS has got to stop. Tell them you're sorry they can't handle it out there, but they got to take the crime off the block. And if they look at you like they think you're insane, or start calling you scarecrow thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have suddenly co-opted your game, or worse yet, saying that you really don't know, that's the same thing they said about me a long time ago. And if they tell folks that you finally lost your nerve, that's the same thing they said about us when we said Johannesburg. But I think you young folks need to know that things don't go both ways. You can't talk respect on every other song or just every other day. What I'm speaking on now is the raps about the women folks. On one song, she's your African queen, and on the next one, she's a joke. And you ain't said no words that I haven't heard, but that ain't no compliment. It only insults 8 people out of 10 and questions your intelligence. 4-letter words or 4-syllable words won't make you a poet. It will only magnify how shallow you are and let everybody know it. And if they look at you like they think you're insane, or they call you scarecrow thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that the white folks have finally co-opted your game, or you really don't know, they said that about me a long time ago. If they finally start telling people that you lost your nerve, that's what they said about Johannesburg. You ain't insane, you have got a brain, you haven't gone lame, you have got your game. Remember, keep the nerve, keep the nerve. Keep the nerve, keep the nerve. We're talking about peace.
So that was very different. Yeah, I was surprised to kind of hear that sound from Gil Scott Heron. Well, not necessarily surprised, but if you consider the rest of the work that we've listened to today, you know, it doesn't sound the same. It is new, it is different, given it is kind of in the 90s, so he takes influence from where hip-hop has gone and incorporates that into his own music, which is really cool to see kind of how a forefather of hip-hop kind of does that. So this album is a little bit more introspective than the rest. It's after a return of 12 years, he reflects back on his own life and struggles with addiction and talks about that throughout this album. And yeah, I think it's also, I like this song, particularly because it talks about misogyny in rap. which has been an issue of controversy and misogyny just in music in general. And there's this line where he says, he criticizes artists who treat women as queens in one song and then as a joke in others. And he kind of notes that they're misusing this form. He says, poetry and the purpose of poetry, you aren't a poet if you use four-letter words and four-syllable words. The substance and purpose are what matters. So he really encourages artists to be mindful of that and be mindful of the impact that they have on listeners. And he kind of acts as this conscious figure for kind of music of the 80s and 90s, as you can see through this message. So we are nearly out of time. Thank you for joining me this morning. This has been WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. My name's Gabriel Molnar. This show is called Birdbrained. Again, that was Gil Scott Heron. There's one more song that I would have played. It's called Me and the Devil off the album I'm New Here. So if you find the time in your morning to listen to that song, it's this really interesting track. Gil Scott Heron uses these really big, grimy kind of sounds traditionally heard in hip-hop. This song comes off the album I'm New Here, which was released in 2010, a year before he died. Gil Scott Heron passed away in 2011 due to complications with AIDS and HIV. And yeah, so life and music of Gil Scott Heron. I couldn't really do it justice in an hour, but I hope that I gave you all a taste. I hope that I whetted your whistle, if you will, and that you all found that interesting. I will be back here next week at 6 a.m. talking more about neo-soul. We will be diving into the work of Lauryn Hill and Erykah Badu. So if that sounds interesting to you, please join me next week, 6 a.m., WMFO in Medford.